and this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Spring weather is back. A little rainy out there today, though. Raised beds are going up. Gardening season is upon us. But like most things in the middle of an ongoing pandemic, gardeners are facing issues, too, one of which is apparently a shortage of seeds. So we want to hear from you as we begin our monthly gardening show. Joining Cincinnati Edition are Campbell County Extension Office agents, Sarah Stoll. She's on the phone. Sarah, hello.
Hey, good to see everybody. Good to talk to you. Good to hear you.
It's good to hear you, too. And we also have with us via Skype, Waterfield's Director of Greenhouse Operations and University of Cincinnati Horticulture Program Adjunct Professor Joshua Jones. Joshua, welcome back.
Oh, it's good to be here.
A lot more titles. Your introduction has gotten longer since last time you were on, so congratulations.
I was going to say that turned into a mouthful for you.
That's all right. And we want to hear from our listeners as well, all of your questions about gardening, challenges you're facing right now, or just general questions that you've had lingering for a while. 513-419-7100 is the number to call. If you are already on hold waiting to ask your questions, hang on. We're going to get to you coming up. So let's start with you, Sarah. What's going on in the world of gardening right now? Is it tough out there for people who are ready to get back out in their yards? Is there difficulty finding access to the items that you need?
Well, interesting that you ask. You know, I'm trying to turn this whole pandemic into positive. And so thank goodness Mother Nature has provided us with decent weather. So a lot of people are out. They are enjoying their landscape maybe for the first time or even more so than they traditionally would be. So, you know, it'd be adding new perennials, getting your gardens ready, maybe new projects going on. But I had quite a few phone calls about vegetable gardening, thinking about these so-called victory gardens and making sure that they could get plants in that they can feed themselves and their families during this this crisis that we're going through.
Tell me what a victory garden is.
So, you know, that started back, you know, during the wars, and, you know, the families were planting, caring, and growing, harvesting, and eating from their gardens, their at-home gardens, and maybe sharing with their neighbors. So a lot of these home gardens, victory gardens are, you know, I'm seeing more of them, or people have been calling, asking how to do that. And I just want to advise, please start small. If this is your first time, don't think that you're going to grow all the vegetables that you and your family will be planning on eating this summer. So that can be overwhelming. Maybe think about a crop or two that you eat a lot, maybe like your lettuces or potatoes, something that, especially potatoes, that you could store away for a period of time. So gardening, if you had never done it before, can be overwhelming. It could be fairly expensive at first, but it is very enjoyable, very therapeutic, and I think that is what we all need at this time, is a place to go and enjoy and reconnect with Mother Nature.
And Joshua Jones, let's get your take on the current situation as well. What are you seeing from people you interact with as it relates to their plans for the gardening season?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I've never seen so much excitement around both community gardening and home gardening. I feel like, at least in my neighborhood, it seems like all of the landscapes are the best they've ever looked. So people are definitely itching to get out there. And I really just want to reiterate what Sarah said. The most useful advice I can ever give a new gardener is to start small, just a few crops, again, that you eat the most of, like she said. Otherwise it gets to be a chore and not a therapeutic outlet. And I think it's, you know, really important to keep it therapeutic instead of something that you are now, you know, kind of over your head, and you know, you don't enjoy it anymore.
Okay. 513-419-7100 is the number to call to join the conversation. If you would like, if you've got questions about your own situation at your home, or if you've got some concerns about whether you're going to have access to things you need to restart your garden this year. Let's go to the phones now. We've got Angela on the line. Hi, Angela. What's your question or comment?
Hi. We tried to start a walnut tree last year, and we would, you know, we have them all through the yard where you don't want them because too close, and there's just some neighbor's yard that the squirrels, you know, drop them and then they grow. And so I wanted one where I wanted it. And we were successful last year. We planted it in the spring, and it had leaves, and it was growing and all of that. And in the fall, we put leaves in there so it would not get too cold over the winter and all of that. And that was fine. And this spring, it had leaves, and it was growing, and I was really happy. And all of a sudden, those last two times when we had frost, all of the green leaves turned brown. And now I'm afraid, am I doomed or will it come back?
Okay, Angela, so you planted a walnut tree last year, and then this spring, after you took some care of it over the winter, it did have some leaves, but the frost apparently turned them brown and killed them. So, Joshua, let's go to you on this one first. Is the walnut tree doomed, or is this normal?
Well, I wouldn't. It's starting, unfortunately, to become the new normal, is we get these warmer late winter / early springs, and it kind of tricks our trees into thinking it's time to wake up, and then, you know, we see a lot with fruit trees, we get subsequent frosts after those warmer periods, and we lose a lot of our blooms. I wouldn't say that it's doomed. I would just, you know, kind of observe it, and, you know, I by no means would come and pull it out now. It's definitely been under some stress, but it's very possible that it might, it definitely has the mechanisms to re-sprout new leaves and continue on.
Sarah Stoles, let's go to you. Do you have any comments on that?
Yeah, so I've had some of similar issues. I kind of look in my backyard daily multiple times of my cherished ginkgo tree that I have that a dear friend gave to me. So, yes, the foliage has been burnt or winter damage has occurred. And so I'm going to leave it be. I will add this coming fall, because there has been some environmental stress, I will add a very low dose of nitrogen this coming fall. I'm not going to do anything right now. I went ahead and pulled back the mulch, making sure that, you know, adequate amount of water gets down in there. So keep that in mind if there's any further stresses that do happen this coming spring, summer, especially if any drought happens, making sure that you give it some TLC care there. But I would caution about using fertilizer at this time, because that could just oversend some growth that you're not wanting, like water sprouts, things that are not going to be productive, especially for any nut or fruit trees.
Angela, there's your advice. Good luck with that walnut tree. Call us back next month and let us know how it goes. Thanks so much for your call. 513-419-7100 is the number to call if you've got a question or comment about gardening in the pandemic. Let's go now to Ellen on the line. Hi, Ellen. What's your question or comment?
Hi there. I like to grow zucchini in my backyard garden, and every year I get the vine borer thing that happens where they, you know, the plant looks totally healthy and then all of a sudden it just keels over and it dies, and it's got the worms in the stems of the zucchini. And I read somewhere once that if you plant after a certain date, that you might avoid the time when the vine borer fly, you know, insect is flying around looking for a place to land, and your plants.
You're absolutely correct.
Chance of. Yeah. So what's that date?
It sounds like you're eager to jump on that one, Joshua. What's the right date to get started on zucchini?
I feel this question all the time. So June 25th is after June 25th, the adults have already laid their larvae. So you should be good to go. The method that I use, I'll actually plant a zucchini crop early. You know, the Mother's Day kind of May 15th planting date as normal. And then I always have a few that will be ready after that June 25th date. And I just pull out the ones that have been affected by the squash borer and replant the new ones. That way I don't have to delay my zucchini harvest, because, you know, we love zucchini in my household and I'd like to keep it going as long as possible. But yeah, after June 25th, you should be in the clear from the squash vine borer.
There you go, Ellen. I hope that was helpful. Thanks for listening, and thanks so much for the phone call. We want to hear from the rest of you as well, 513-419-7100. This is your chance to hear from our experts to answer your gardening questions, concerns, or if you have some advice for us, 513-419-7100. And we are joined today by Campbell County Extension Office agent Sarah Stoles, and we also have with us Waterfield's Director of Greenhouse Operations, University of Cincinnati Horticulture Program Adjunct Professor Joshua Jones, who's with us via Skype. Sarah, for those of us who are ready to jump into gardening in our yards and our landscaping, what should our checklist start to look like? What are those first few items we need if it's that time of year for us and we're ready to get our hands dirty?
Well, I want to separate if we're thinking about our ornamental landscape and then if we're thinking about our vegetable.
Either well, cool. Way, let's start with landscaping.
Landscaping. All right. So let's say you want to plant some new trees and shrubs. Get your soil tested. For sure. In Campbell County, all Campbell County residents and most Kentucky counties, residents are able to receive free soil sampling. And even under this COVID-19, our offices are open, though with limited public access. So we're still accepting soil samples. Just call your respective county for more details and instructions on how to drop off those samples. But you get your report back. The reason why I say this is because certain plants, let's say you want to plant some hollies or hydrangeas, boxwoods, those prefer different types of soil pHs. And if your soil pH is out of range, over time can have some underlying issues. And most plants may not show those symptoms the first 2 years. And so you think, oh, well, you know, it's fine. Well, then over time, and if you add on continuous environmental stresses like winter damage or drought, then we can, all of those combined will over time be harmful to the plant. So definitely want to get that soil test. Choose the right plant for the right site. So for example, let's just say a weeping willow. We're not going to want to plant that next to the foundation of the house. Reason being they have shallow root systems. They like water, so would not want you to plant that next to your foundation. So think about that. Also think about your sun exposure. Most hydrangeas prefer, you know, indirect sunlight, so, you know, you don't want to plant them in full sun, though there's always exceptions to the rules. So if you're not sure, you know, the proper height, mature height, even the zone of a plant, you know, that's what Extension's here for. Let's, you know, reach out to us and we'll be glad to go over that with you. And there are different types of cultivars and varieties that may have disease resistance, different fall color of a maple tree, you know, so make sure you properly get that, you understand what you're going to buy. And our local nurseries are still open, so keep that in mind as well. But they have limited access in their greenhouses, so it may be a little challenging, if you will. You know, I love going to the greenhouses and browsing around. So, you know, if you know exactly what you want, call your nurseries and say, hey, do you have a red maple? What varieties are you going to carry this year? What types of hydrangeas are you going to carry? They'll be glad to go over that with you. So keep that in mind. And then once you get that, make sure you have good soil, good drainage, and any more information that you may have, proper care of any of your new landscape plants, make sure to reach out to your Extension office and we'll be here to answer those for you.
And let's turn now to Joshua Jones from the Waterfields and the University of Cincinnati. I've got to get a handle on how to introduce you, Joshua. What should our checklist look like for those of us who are ready to start our vegetable garden?
So right now, we have a couple more weeks before the frost date. So if we planted a spring garden, it's good to start, harvesting those spring crops out, making room for your summer crops. And then it's a great time to plan right now. So, what plants you're going to plant where, your spacing. So that will dictate the quantities that you need to be purchasing at the greenhouse. There's nothing more frustrating than either an overcrowded garden or you know, on the flip side of that, a garden that you didn't utilize all your space. So coming into the nursery with a plan of how many plants and where they're going to be in your garden is a great thing that you can be doing right now. And then, yeah, I just urge people, I know that the weather is nice. I would still give it, you know, at least another week before we go into planting. The rule of thumb in Cincinnati is always May 15th. A lot of times we'll cheat that up a week. But I think 2 weeks is still a bit aggressive. If you did start your own seedlings, which, I love when gardeners do, this is a great time to start, doing what we call hardening off. So putting your starts from the nice climate controlled indoor, atmosphere, and then putting them right outside in the garden can be very detrimental. So what we recommend is placing your starts outside for a few hours on day one, and then bring them back in. And then maybe a few more hours on day two. And that lets them slowly acclimate to those outside environmental conditions. So I think that's really good advice.
513-419-7100 is the number to call for our monthly gardening show. We've got Sarah Stoles on the phone and Joshua Jones via Skype. We can also take an email at talk@wvxu.org. And we did get an email from listener Donna. She says that she can't find seed potatoes, but has sprouts from last year's crop. Can those be cultivated? Can I cultivate potatoes from those? Which one of you might be able to answer that question?
Well, I can go on that. Joshua,
usually, when you're in the studio, I you'll raise a hand. I'll know who to go to for each one.
We can make eye contact.
Exactly. And so this is a little more difficult to know who might be the better expert on a particular topic. Sarah, let's start with you.
Okay. So I just was out planting yesterday, which is a little late, but I still am encouraging gardeners, if you have your seed potatoes, go ahead and plant them. Then I've been receiving phone calls. Well, I can't find the seed potatoes, but how about, you know, at the store or ones that came up from the garden last year? So twofold here. How about the ones that are sprouting up in the garden like we had as I was planting yesterday? I mean, they're going to produce, okay? They're just not going to be as large. They're going to most likely be more susceptible to insect damage and disease. So keep that in mind. Very similar to ones that you will purchase from the store, you know, the grocery store that, you know, you purchased a sack of potatoes and then you forgot about them and they're starting, you're seeing the eyes. Can you plant those? Yes, you can plant those, but I encourage, you know, they're not going to be as productive. They're definitely not disease resistant. They may not even be a variety that is suitable for our weather conditions. So under these times, you know, can you get an edible crop? Yes. And would I recommend a commercial grower doing these methods? No. A homeowner, if you have the space, if you're willing to try, there will be failure. Okay. Joshua?
No, I completely agree. We wouldn't consider, you know, the volunteer potatoes or the grocery store potatoes to be best practice, but you know, during a pandemic potatoes are better than no potatoes, in my opinion. So it's not something we would typically recommend, but I think it's worthwhile and it's minimal effort to plant potatoes. Or if you already have them sprouting, you know, there's not a whole lot to be done. So, yeah, I'd say let them go and see what happens.
Which country was it? Did I read it was Belgium that is urging its citizenry to eat potatoes, French fries twice a week because they have an overabundance of potatoes right now? Wouldn't that be a nice position to be in?
Yeah.
513-419-7100 is the number to call if you'd like to join our conversation. We'll go back to the phones now. We have Liz on the line. Hi, Liz. What's your question or comment?
Hi there. I have a question about dirt for a raised bed. My husband and I are working on a couple of large raised beds. And what I've read about is a mixture, is topsoil, some kind of compost or, you know, cow manure, or some kind of, like, something like that, and also, like, just like a potting mix. So if you could clarify that, like, how to mix it, what to use. I also, you know, we put a little sand in there too, just to help with a little, you know, drainage. And the topsoil that we did use was from bags, and it seemed like it was a halfway decent quality, but it had pieces of plastic in it. It had a couple pieces of metal. It just looked a little trashy and breaking it up. Could you just clarify the mix for a raised bed and where you get the best product for growing vegetables?
All right, Liz, thanks for the question. I think we started with Sarah on the potatoes. Joshua, can we start with you on this one?
So I don't know if I'm allowed to recommend where I typically buy my soil or not. Essentially, what I always urge people to with caution is when you hear topsoil, instinctually we think that's always going to be really great soil. But typically the topsoil, especially if it's harvested from around here, is a lot of clay. So my soil mixtures tend to be a little bit less on the percentage side of topsoil, but she was right on target. I like to have a mixture of maybe 20% topsoil and then the split the 80% between some sort of, mushroom compost is a popular one. Normal compost is great. And a manure would be the other part of that.
And Sarah, would you want to weigh in on the topsoil?
Yeah. So if you need any guidance, of course, University of Kentucky has wonderful publications on all of this. And as we're building our soils for especially vegetable gardening, know that this is an annual application and you're always adding to that. It'd be with your leaves, grass clippings, your compost that you're making and your at home. So just keep in mind that this is going to be continual. Don't think that you're going to get, one dump and then that's it for the remaining of your vegetable gardening career. So, just reach out to us if you have any other questions about creating that ideal compost or those percentages.
Liz, good luck. Thank you for listening. And thanks for the phone call, 513-419-7100. We have a few people waiting. Hang tight. We're going to go right back to the phones when we come back from this very short break. You're listening to the Monthly Gardening Show on Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. The Monthly Gardening Show continues now with Campbell County Extension Office Agent Sarah Stoles. She's on the phone. Sarah, hello.
Hey.
And we also have with us via Skype, Waterfields, Director of Greenhouse Operations and University of Cincinnati Horticulture Program Adjunct Professor Joshua Jones. Joshua, thanks for sticking around.
Glad to be here.
513-419-7100 is the number to call to join our conversation with your questions about gardening. We've got Tom on the line. Hi, Tom. What's your question or comment?
Hi. I'm calling to find out. Thank you for the information about the mixture for the raised bed. How do you prepare the ground, say a dirt spot that I've got 3x7, and should I put screen down and stuff like that? And also, the type of wood that I use, does it have to be new and pristine, or can it be old 2x8?
All right, Tom, hang on.
Thank you. I'll take my answer up there.
Well, thanks for the call, Tom. We appreciate that. So the question is about whether you build a raised bed with mesh, how do you prepare the ground underneath, and should those boards that are used be older or new? Let's go to you, Sarah.
Well, this is very interesting because we're dealing with this at our education gardens in Campbell County. So all of our raised beds are made with pine wood, probably about 8 to 10 years ago, maybe a little longer, and they're slowly starting to wither away. So we're going to have to reach out and come together and figure out what our plan is going to be and redo all of them. I always encourage folks, to use
one, whatever you may have around your landscape, it be rock, stone, anything that you may have, or if you need to go to the lumber store, get, you can even use cedar. I've used that. It has a longer shelf life, if you will. It's going to be more expensive, but you can find that. Pine is also another good one. I do recommend not using the railroad ties. I know that was traditionally used, you know, a decade or so ago, but we want to not use those. And then the material that is composite, you know, that is plastic, if you will, you can use that as well. Of course, that's going to be more expensive. But as I said, you know, the pine that we've used, it's starting to degrade. The joints are starting to wither away. So we're going to have to kind of take all those apart and reconfigure what our next steps are.
And Joshua, there was a question about mesh and preparing the ground as well.
Yeah, so I typically, I want my raised beds to be at least 10 to 12 inches tall, so off of the existing ground. And if you reach that height, there's not a lot of prep work that needs to be done to the ground. What I typically will do is remove any like large perennial weeds. Even if there's if I'm, you know, placing the new bed on turf, I won't even worry about smothering out the grass. Typically that 10 to 12 inches of soil on top is enough to smother that grass out. Like I said, I just remove any of the perennial weeds. If there's violet or dandelion in there, I'll take those out of the inside of the bed before placing my soil in. But if you do want to just be on the safe side, laying down a layer of cardboard is a very well time-tested technique that we use. And, you know, we all have it laying around and it's, you know, low cost. One other thing I did want to caution, I am very supportive of using recycled materials to build your bed. But when you're using old wood, just be cautious because the older wood, especially pressure treated wood, still contains arsenic. So I would be wary of, you know, the older recycled material that I'm using. If it's pressure treated, I would probably stay away, not knowing when it was made and whether or not it would contain arsenic. And that's only if you're doing an edible gardening. If you're doing a flower garden, I think it's less important.
And 513-419-7100 is our number if you've got a question for our gardening experts. Let's go to Maggie now. Hi, Maggie. What's your question or comment?
I'm 72 years old, and I'm not really able to get out to do a lot of stuff, like uptown. I'm kind of locked myself down.
Sure.
Everywhere. So I'm wanting to get into the gardening, but my grandparent, she used to hang green beans, okay? She called them leather britches. This goes back to the Appalachian days. And into the depression part. And I want to know exactly how that's done, if anybody knows. I don't know if there's a special green bean, how long you leave them on the bush. I don't know. I just remember them as a child that my grandmother hang on the porch by the strings, and they'd be loaded with them. She would dry them out.
Do you remember eating these, Maggie?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she would send me down to the cellar in a trash bag, a paper trash bag, to grab a bunch of them, which are really dry and brittle, and bring them up and throw them in the hot pan of water. And they would green up and cook just like a green bean.
Well, thank you for the very folksy question. We're grateful to have it, and thanks for listening. I'm going to place you on hold and turn now to our experts. And Joshua and Sarah, this is that awkward moment where I have to ask which one of you might know best about leather britches.
So I am definitely unfamiliar with that particular varietal. I've not heard of one called leather britches, but I'm familiar with drying out the bean for the bean inside. I've not seen green beans that you can dry the whole pod and then kind of, she described, like almost rehydrating them. And I'm not familiar with any green beans that do that. Maybe Sarah is.
I'm speechless.
Okay, so I just did a quick Google, which is sometimes a trick we use on this show when we get stumped. And obviously, I don't know anything about gardening. But leather breeches are described in the first few results that came up as a sort of dish that are just made from dried green beans. And it looks like one particular blog refers to this as... they're simply dried green beans. Back in the day, before canning jars and pressure cookers were commonplace, dried green beans, quote, leather breeches, were the most popular way of preserving green beans for use during the winter months. So it sounds like just regular green beans that have been dried. So I guess the better question is, outside of the very charming term, what's the best way to dry a green bean?
So I would recommend pole beans. I think they typically have a longer harvest window, so they will typically outproduce their counterpart, being the bush bean. There are many times where beans, we just don't find them on the plant, and we'll come back a couple weeks later and they're already dried, hanging on the plant. So pole bean might be a really good way to do that. You can trellis them upwards so they have nice access to sunlight, and you might be able to just dry them right there on the plant.
Maggie, good luck with your leather breeches, and hope you stay sane during this prolonged lockdown. Thanks so much for listening, and thank you for the call. Let's go now to Rob. Hi, Rob. What's your question or comment?
Yes, thank you for taking my call. The grass is growing fine. I planted sod years ago. It's been growing fine. But now there's chickweed in a lot of spots. And my wife tells me the best way to get it out is to dig it out. I'm not a real fan of digging all this chickweed out. Is there an easier, safe way to get this out?
Okay, Rob, let's turn it over to the experts. Sarah, how do you get rid of chickweed?
So chickweed grows very low into the landscape. So that is one that can be very challenging in our turf. So you mentioned, you know, seeding a few years ago, and of course, I don't know your particular landscape, but over time, turf can thin out for various reasons. It could be shade, it could be drought, it can be competition, soil issues with pH or nutrients. So if the grass is thinning, then that's when our weeds can be problematic. Though if our turf is not thinning, if you're over fertilizing, that could be an issue as well. Anytime that, you know, the weed seeds are there in the soil, so anytime you disturb the soil surface, that could potentially allow for weed seeds to germinate. So that's a long-winded answer. So what can you do about it? I wouldn't suggest hand pulling it unless it's just in a, you know, tiny little area. Yes, there are weed management chemically that you can do. This will be going dormant soon. So if you need help with weed management using chemicals, why don't you reach out to me and I'll be glad to go over that with you. Because we're kind of at the entail of, because it's at its full peak right now. So managing it with a chemical may not be your best method at this time. But I want to get you the information so that you can start thinking about how you can do that in the future.
Okay, Rob, be sure to look up Sarah at the Campbell County Extension Office. Mm-hmm. You'll find her information there, and you can take that conversation directly to her. Thanks so much for listening, and thanks for the call, Rob. Let's go now to Tara. Hi, Tara. What's your question or comment?
Hi. My question is more in terms of container farming. I do have a raised bed garden, but the containers that people often use, whether they're a 5-gallon bucket or an old watering trough, they obviously are in a confined state. We had placed rubber matting, probably not the best choice to have used, but in an effort to deter weeds from growing, we placed rubber matting in our raised bed. It's about a 20x20 area. And I'm starting to wonder if the nutrients and oxygen and things on that may be being hindered by that separation between the actual earth and then the beds that we have placed on top of them.
Okay, Tara, thank you for the call. The connection was a little shaky there, but it sounds like the question is, if you place a mat at the bottom of a raised bed, will it stop the nutrients and oxygen from getting to the plants? That's from Tara. Joshua, your comment.
It depends on the mat, quite honestly, which is why I advised the cardboard earlier in the show, because it eventually will break down and that barrier will eventually not be there. I think best case scenario is we don't put those barriers between our pots or our raised beds and the earth itself. I find when I leave the pot, you know, because we do a mixture of raised bed gardening and container gardening at my home. And I like to put our containers in on top of the soil somewhere in the yard. And that way it helps them wick up moisture and they don't dry out nearly as quickly. I doubt that they're actually accessing the nutrients from the soil below, but I have found that it is a little bit easier to keep them hydrated, which allows them to, you know, absorb their own nutrients a little bit easier.
Thank you for the call, Tara. We appreciate it and hope that helps. We got an email question from Nazrin, who wants to know when the appropriate time is to plant sunflower seeds. Sarah, can you help us with that one?
Yeah, funny that you mentioned we're going to be doing that here shortly. So just we found that direct planting or direct seeding of sunflower seeds in our gardens is not successful because there are little munchkins around that like to eat them before they're able to grow. So plant them inside. So probably within the next few weeks, we'll be planting them indoors in our seeding trays, and then we'll actually plant them outside. So that's what we like to do. And also if you direct plant them now, if we get any late frost, which again, as Joshua said earlier in the segment, the second week of May is, you know, on average our last frost-free date, you could potentially kill any of those emerge seedlings that come out. So we like to start them indoors.
Okay, I think we've got time for one last phone call, and we've got Lonnie on the line. Hi, Lonnie, what's your question or comment?
I was just calling to comment about the lady that was asking about the leather breeches.
Yeah, Maggie.
And yeah, that's an old Appalachian custom. Like you say, before they had canning or refrigeration, what they would do is take a needle and thread and actually string them like you would popcorn for a Christmas tree, and hang them near the stove in the house till they dried out, and then, like you said, you just reconstitute them in boiling water.
That's a great story, Lonnie. Have you done this before?
No, I haven't personally, but actually, there's a wealth of information. There's a whole series of books called the Foxfire Books or Foxfire Series that tells all about Appalachian life. It was a college or high school teacher that had his students go out and interview Appalachians in the 60s, and he's got a series of 12 or 14 books that they tell everything from meat processing to making wagon wheels to picking wild herbs and all that. It's a wealth of information. So,
well, Lonnie, thanks so much for the call. That was very helpful. We do appreciate it very much. Thanks for listening.
You betcha.
All right. So I'm mostly concerned about what my Facebook ads are going to look like after I've done this Google search for leather britches. And I'm hoping that no one's looking over my shoulder next time they catch me scrolling. Hey, guys, this was fun. I know we're all living in a very weird time right now, but a little bit of normalcy will help all of us. So those of you who are looking forward to getting back out in the yards, you can always reach out to our experts directly. Our guests today have been Campbell County Extension Office Agent Sarah Stoles and Waterfields, Director of Greenhouse Operations and University of Cincinnati Horticulture Program Adjunct Professor Joshua Jones. Sarah, thank you. Joshua, thank you. Can't wait till we can reconvene here in the studio.
Good to hear your voice.
Thanks so much for having me.
Same at you all. Thanks so much. And you have been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Coming up at 2 o'clock, we'll have Governor Mike DeWine's daily press briefing on the state of Ohio's coronavirus situation. And tomorrow on Cincinnati Edition, Thursday, Ken Rudin, the political junkie, will be with us for the full hour. Another good call-in show. So write the number down, 513-419-7100. If you've got commentary, questions, or concerns
about the state of things in politics. The producer for today's show is Elise Meckler. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstrow. Archives of our program found online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.